Climate change is real. Its impacts upon us. That seems to be the general consensus in the scientific community. But if you read a variety of different publications, you may not come to that conclusion. There are a number of climate change skeptics, and they're doing a good job of confusing the issues in the media. With that said, the question begs, is there a responsibility of the media to make sure we get it right? Good morning, I'm David Fair, and this is Issues of the Environment, a regular Wednesday feature during Morning Edition on 89.1 WEMU. Our guest this morning has been instrumental in driving the conversation on how best to report on environmental and energy questions. Roger Harabin is environmental analyst for the BBC, one of its senior journalists on the environment and energy. In fact, he wrote the BBC's guidance report on reporting on risk, calling for news instincts to be tempered by statistical perspective. In his pursuit of truth in reporting, he has interviewed many of the world's leading figures, including Al Gore, John Kerry, Margaret Thatcher, and Tony Blair. While Roger does live in London, he is currently in Ann Arbor as a Knight Wallace Fellow at the University of Michigan. His work is so respected, colleagues have credited him with devising Harabin's Law on Disproportionate Media Coverage. Roger, good morning and welcome to WEMU.
Good morning.
What, as your understanding, is Harabin's Law?
Harabin's Law was based on some research I did looking into transport deaths in the UK. We were finding that the government was spending very much more to save a life on the railways than it did on the roads. And I started to look into why this might be. And I looked back to the beginning of the century, the 20th century that was then, and saw that in the Times newspaper in the UK, there was a tiny two-paragraph report on the bottom of page one saying 26 dead in rail crash. Right, 26 dead in rail crash, and it makes two paragraphs at the bottom of the front page. And the reason was that rail crashes were so frequent in those days that they were barely worth reporting. So what happened was then in the UK, we nationalized the railways and the government became responsible for rail safety. So then legislators started to get the heat from other politicians and from the media every time there was a rail crash. So they started to make the railways safer and safer, spending more and more money. And the safer they made them, the less frequent crashes were. The less frequent the crashes, the more we reported them. And the more pressure was put to spend more money on the railways. We're spending a massive amount to save a death on the railways and next to nothing to save a death on the roads because road crashes are so frequent that nobody reports them. So that one of my colleagues credited me with Harabin's Law. That's a kind of law that applies to the media when stuff gets really, really common. You don't report on it much. And that is where climate change is more or less hit now. The media has reached something of an impasse where there's very widespread agreement in the scientific community that climate change is real, happening, largely driven by humans, potentially extremely dangerous. But, you know, there's very little new coming out to report to add to that. And so the noise in the debate is being made by skeptics who are trying to pick holes in the argument. So we have a kind of perversity of coverage here.
There was probably no more intense coverage than when 2009, when Climategate, as many referred to it, erupted. What impact did that have on media coverage of climate change issues?
Well, in the UK, it had a really quite big impact on climate change reporting because we in the UK media had been largely persuaded by the scientific consensus that climate change was real. So when Climategate broke, making it look as though the figures might have been fiddled or doctored in some way, I took it very seriously. And indeed, the reports into Climategate, the investigations into Climategate, had some real serious questions to be asked of them, and I don't think really were what was absolutely needed at the time. But, you know, recently we have seen a new study, partly funded by the Koch brothers, come out confirming that the climate record from the University of East Anglia was correct. In fact, that the climate record from the University of East Anglia has possibly underestimated the reporting. So, you know, you might have thought that the waters would have settled over that issue now, but of course what happens is if there's a big apparent scandal like Climategate, it gets lots of coverage. If the scandal later turns out to be actually not really much of a scandal at all from the scientific point of view of the record, although there were a lot of questions asked about the methodology, then that doesn't make much coverage. So the public is left, I think, with the impression that actually, can we trust this climate science stuff? Certainly your polls in the States suggest that a lot of people don't trust it. And really that part of climate science now is looking extremely trustworthy to me. And I think there's unnecessary public disquiet about it.
In your estimation, in your study of the statistical analysis and the science, is it time to ring the alarm bells and get very serious about it?
Well, the scientists have been telling us, the mainstream scientists have been telling us that time has been running for many years now. I mean, we just hit an impasse with policy. You know, with the United States, when President Bush pulled out of the Kyoto Protocol,
right.
It seemed to me that the international talks were really, I mean, really very seriously compromised, because whenever the United States tried to re-enter under a future president, you would have a massive time delay. You already had a big time delay because President Clinton, while nodding to Kyoto, didn't actually do hardly anything about it. So you're stuck now and with this great impasse between the U.S. and China, and then India not willing to make major steps, obviously, until the really big polluters get their act together. It's very difficult to see where progress in this issue internationally is going to come from.
It was very interesting to me when Al Gore, who is a proponent of taking this climate change issue and science very seriously, came out with his film, and perhaps he wasn't the best messenger for this film because it was as polarizing as could possibly be. Why was the reaction as it was?
I think part of the reaction was because it was from Al Gore. Part of the reaction was because there are a great cohort of people around the world, and particularly in this country, who are of the libertarian frame of mind and who simply cannot accept climate science as it is. It's not just that they won't accept it.
How can they not?
They cannot, because it does not accord with their worldview. If you are of the worldview that big government is a bad thing, that governments tend to abuse power and oppress peoples, and then you look at this climate change issue, which is demanding a global transfer of wealth from rich nations to poor, a kind of global socialism as they see it, and that is the implication of climate change if the science is right, then these people look at that science and they say, no, we cannot accept the science and we will not accept it. That's why the argument is so vociferous. But in terms of the Gore film, I mean, the Gore film itself was flawed, and there was one bit in it that I was particularly unhappy with, and in fact had a bit of a run-in with Al Gore about, in which he leads you to believe that the rise in CO2 matches the rise in temperature over the historic climate record. And he doesn't actually say it, but he creates a very strong mental picture for you that makes you link these two graphs. And actually, the story is much more complicated than that. And he must have known that at the time. And I interviewed him over it, and it got quite quite unpleasant.
This is Issues of the Environment on 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair. Our guest this morning is Roger Harabin. He is environmental analyst for the BBC and one of its senior journalists on the environment and energy, and currently in Ann Arbor as a Knight Wallace Fellow at the University of Michigan. We're talking about the media's role in the climate change discussion. How different is coverage of climate change in the U.S. than in other countries around the world? Do we have a particular bent that is not recognizable elsewhere?
A recent study by Oxford University concluded that in the States, in the papers that it studied, climate change was reported pretty straight in the news pages. In the Wall Street Journal, it noted that editorial columns and opinion pieces were very heavily climate skeptic. So there was quite a division between the news pages and the editorial pages. But it made some quite disparaging comments about Fox News, which of course is a major provider of news to people.
Let's talk about the media in and of itself for a minute. Has the media in the U.S., Fox News included, CNN, everyone else, contributed to the politicizing of what should be a scientific and academic exploration?
Fox News has undoubtedly contributed massively to the politicizing of climate change in the United States. But I do think that politicizing was almost inevitable anyway. You know, it's Fox News are not alone. They're reporting, senators, other politicians, other opinion formers who have strong libertarian views, as we discussed earlier, and who simply cannot accept climate change. They're also doing something which is partly they're serving a useful function in calling into question the inevitability of consequences as defined by climate scientists. So I think we have to draw a line between the divisions of the climate debate. So, for instance, what do we know? Well, we know temperatures are rising. There's no doubt about that. We're not certain that they're bigger than those in the medieval warm period or not yet globally, but it looks that way. Is CO2 a warming gas? Yes, it is. These things are undeniably true. It is not undeniably true that we will have catastrophic climate change. Almost all the models point that way, but there's a possibility they might be wrong. Maybe the world is better able to cope with CO2 than the majority of scientists think. There is that possibility. And there are also legitimate debates to be had about who shares the burden and how policy objectives should be achieved. So, I'm not one of these people who says we should close down the climate debate. I don't think that is the case. But what we have to be is much more careful about the way we report it. And that means climate scientists have to be more careful too, because in the past, we've had leading scientists saying, on climate change, the debate is over. And that is only partly true, because there are parts of climate change where the debate is over, and there are parts of the climate change debate where the debate goes on. So climate scientists and policymakers have to be more careful, too, about what they claim to be certain.
Once again, this is Issues of the Environment on 89.1 WEMU. I'm David Fair, sitting alongside Roger Harabin. And Roger is environmental analyst for the BBC and one of its senior journalists on the environment and energy. He's currently in Ann Arbor as a Knight Wallace Fellow at the University of Michigan. Well, we've been talking a little bit about the climate change debate, and it has certainly, on a very minor level, injected itself into the Republican presidential debates here in the U.S. Climate change, well down the priority list of all the candidates in the U.S. right now. Nonetheless, when it does come up, the right-wing Republicans cast doubt on its validity, as we've pointed out. How would you like to see the media cover the issue without also injecting an organizational or personal viewpoint into the debate?
I don't think it's up to me, really, to comment on how I want the American media to act. I mean, all I can say is, from the point of view of our own reporting in the BBC, this remains a really difficult and divisive and contentious issue. We have just had a report from our own governing trust, the BBC Trust, criticizing BBC News for having too many skeptics on air, too many climate skeptics on air. This was done by an eminent scientist, a geneticist in the UK, brought in by the BBC Trust, who was critical of our reporting. As I said earlier, there are some senior scientists in the UK who want us to close down this debate. We don't feel in the BBC we can completely close it down. Our question is that we grapple with is how much prominence to give skeptical views. How often do you have to have a skeptic on air? In every report we do, climate skeptics would like us to say, to cast doubt on the science. Now, my view is that we cannot do that in every report we do. I have in my bulletins pieces, I get 40 seconds. Well, in 40 seconds, you could spend the entire 40 seconds giving the preamble before you got to the story.
Sure.
So we can't do it every time. The question for us is, how many times is it appropriate, and how prominently should those skeptic views be put on air? And, this is confounded for us by the fact that skeptics tend to be from the libertarian right, almost exclusively from the libertarian right, and are claiming that they have a legitimate political case on this issue too. So there really is no simple solution, and far be it from me to presume to mandate to people in the United States how they cover these things.
Well, based on the direction you see today, who is going to drive the argument forward?
You could ask another question. Is the argument going to be driven forward? There are people who would argue that President Obama has sold the issue of climate change away. That he could have seized it much more aggressively, and he could have said, look, climate change is real, it's happening, it's largely man-made, we're not certain of the consequences, but we are taking a huge risk with the planet. Now, that is a really safe statement to make, in my view, that we are taking a risk with the planet. Mrs. Thatcher herself, that great libertarian, said that very phrase herself. She coined that phrase, we're taking an experiment with the only planet we've got. And she said that 20-odd years ago. And that is undeniably true. So we don't know what the results of climate change will be. There are also fears about CO2 making the oceans more acidic, still alkaline, but more acidic, and possibly making life extremely perilous for many sorts of sea creatures. So these are two of the many experiments we're taking on the planet: of deforestation, of removing top predators from the seas, overfishing, dead zones in the oceans. You name it. There's a whole plethora of issues where we are. The planet experiment is underway. We're taking it, and that we can say for certain.
More now than ever, media sells what the public buys, and the nation is as polarized as the political parties themselves. Is the commercial viability of non-biased, investigative, fact-checked, journalistic analysis in jeopardy?
I think all of our lives in journalism have been made more interesting and more challenging since the advent of the internet. You know, when I started in journalism, this wasn't a force at all. But nowadays, bloggers take and amplify messages, sometimes good information, sometimes, as I know to my cost, utter disinformation, and lies skid around the world before the truth has got its boots on. I think that really makes life very difficult, that it's hard now to find organizations that you can really trust in. And in an age where I see my own adult children now going straight to the web for information, not bothering with television or radio. I mean, my youngest child, 13, doesn't watch television at all or listen to the radio. Everything is on the web. And on the web, my website looks equal to, Mr. Fruitcake website.
Right.
Actually, it doesn't, because he doesn't call himself Mr. Fruitcake. He calls himself Mr. Climate Sensible or something like that.
Right.
And people are tending to seek out views which just simply amplify and corroborate their own. So I'm not quite sure whether, if we ever know the truth about climate change, I'm not quite sure whose channels it will be conveyed to the public by.
Well, as a consumer of media, when you pour through a variety of publications, when you listen to a variety of radio stations, when you watch a variety of television stations, what process do you go through as a consumer to ferret out what you believe to be the truth?
Well, I guess I would watch a relatively small number of outlets and take in a relatively small number of news sources. And those sources that I'd look to, I would generally speaking know whether to believe them or not in the first place. So I'm probably not a good index from that point of view.
What is your website, by the way?
Well, if you Google BBC News, you'll find us. We're pretty pervasive.
I've heard that. That is Roger Harabin. He is environmental analyst for the BBC, one of its senior journalists on the environment and energy. He's in Ann Arbor right now as a Knight Wallace Fellow at the University of Michigan. And once again, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
I'm David Fair, and this has been another installment of Issues of the Environment, a cooperative effort of the Washtenaw County Environmental Health Division and the News Department at 89.1 WEMU.